Here we are in lesson 3 in the book of Ecclesiastes. Now, let me back up and remind you of where we are. Ecclesiastes is that book that you cannot go and grab a verse out of it and try to use it for some super spiritual inspiration, because basically through chapter 10, it's all about how man, who absolutely has no relationship with God, thinks, acts, and lives. In fact, as I've read through the book several times this week, and I get to chapters 11 and 12, I realize how Solomon, as he's 80 years old and he's writing this message to people, he's looking back and he's regretting how he has lived the last 40 years. It's really a book of regret. And he has seen that he's wasted his time for God. And folks, he did. In order to be king, he had to take a wife, because that was just the rules of the game. So when David is laying on his deathbed, he has to take a wife. For David to be able to have Nathan go and crown him as king, he must be married. That was just the rules. So Solomon takes a beautiful wife. She's a Canaanite woman. She's not even a Jewish woman. She is a foreigner. She doesn't even worship God Jehovah. And then he takes another wife and another wife and another wife. And before long, those wives have so influenced Solomon in his young years as a king that he's allowing them to take their gods, their false gods, right into the temple that he built for God, and place those idols right in front of that veil of the curtain to be inside the temple, to be worshiped as if they were true gods, and they were no gods at all. Folks, there is only one God and there is no other gods. Any god that you pick, be it Chemosh, Moloch, name them, okay? Just name any of the gods that are out there. Pick any of the Buddhist gods, Hare Krishna gods, the Mormon gods, any of the other gods that are out there. They are no gods at all. Even pick Allah. Allah does not even exist. He is not a god. Do not say to anyone, you know, they worship Allah and we call him God and it's the same God, because it is not the same God. You look at the characteristics in the Quran of what Allah is, and you look at the characteristics in the Bible of what God is, and they cannot be the same person. Just like you know people, you can know your God. You can look at your husband when he is, like me sometimes, on drugs, you know, Vicodin or whatever. And my wife says to me, Jim, this is not normal you. This is not normal you. I don't say cutting things to her except for whenever I'm in pain and taking pain medicine. And it's just out of my character. You understand that? Or to your wife, whenever something's not going right and maybe they've gone to the dentist or to the doctor or something's out of whack, and you go, this is not their character. When a person gets Alzheimer's, you say, you know, the way they are now, that's not the person I married. I'm just having to endure my loved one that I promised till death do we part, I will be with them and take care of them. But the person I'm living with now, who's dealing with Alzheimer's, is not the person I married, because of their character is different. Allah's character and God Jehovah's character are two different characters. Jehovah tells us that we have a hope that is in front of us of salvation and redemption and a place in heaven. And if we put our trust in the Lord Jesus Christ, we know we will be there with him. For the Muslims, they have to wait till they die to see if the scales of left, the bad things they've done, right, the good things have they done, that the scale of the right outweighs the scale of the left, so that one day they will be able to be resurrected. And if they have the scale on the left with all the things they have done and worse things, then the grave is going to crush them and they will be annihilated and they will exist no longer anywhere. That's what they teach. So when they say to you, you know, we all worship God. No, you don't worship God. I mean, I can go to the Jehovah's Witness. I can go to the Mormons. I can go to, just go down the list. Go down the list of all the false religions. And all the false religions, including Islam, proof text their verses right out of the book of Ecclesiastes. It's because it's how a man without God thinks. It's how a man who does not have God in his life lives his life. Now, Solomon never had the opportunity to be poor and live out in the fields. Remember, David had already been king for 10 years when he had Solomon. Solomon lives 30 years inside under David's rule as king. David ruled for 40 years, and Solomon's only 30 when he takes the throne. So he's never experienced what it's like to be poor. He's never experienced what it's like to not know where your next meal's going to come from. He's never experienced what it's like to have to work a day in his life. No, he has not. We're of the age group here, and some of you are older than I am, but we're of the age group here that many of us were born with absolutely really nothing compared to what the poorest people have today. You realize in Helping Hands, I see the poorest of the poor, and they're living in apartment complexes, paying out for apartment rent in 1 month what was more than a yearly salary 45 years ago. You understand that? Yearly salary. You know, 1974, my first job, I worked an entire year for less than $900. An entire year. And I turned around and I saw my mother's W-2, and she worked a full year as a dental assistant for less than $800. Think again. Think in 1974 what the hourly wage was for people who were working an hourly wage. There wasn't a lot of money. And we spend more than $800. Most of the apartment complexes that I see, the people who live in are spending more than $800 a month for an apartment. Was it $1.30 an hour? Okay, I could read your lips. That's good. All right. I'm going to learn to do that. Well, the poorest of the poor where we live, folks, are richer than most of the people in the rest of the world. Folks, as y'all turn around, you see all the stuff that you got? Stuff that you got. Now, I'm just going to pick on some. You remember last week I was talking about contraptions? Contraptions. What's the cheapest iPad? I guess I shouldn't ask questions, but I'm going to ask questions. What's the cheapest iPad that you can buy today? Oh, glad. What's an iPad? Somebody tell me. Back there, David, your granddaughter. $250. In 1979, you could rent a two-bedroom apartment for $205 a month, because I did. Can you believe that? We're paying for contraptions? Contraptions. Well, let's get away from that and go on. Solomon is saying that, boy, life is just... And I'm not, all that stuff's okay and used in its proper setting. But Solomon is looking back on life and he's saying, look at this. Chapter 3, which we were in last week, chapter 3 and 4, he said, look, I've surveyed everything. I've asked God for wisdom. He's given me wisdom. And I've surveyed everything. And the more I survey, the more I learn. And the more I learn, the more I see it's all madness. And the more madness I see it's all folly and it's all vanity. It's meaningless. It means absolutely nothing. And Solomon has already set up for us a scenario a couple of times in the first four chapters of this book where he has said, you know, the fool is better than the person who is wise. Now, when we talk about fool, we're talking about a person, not a person who's an idiot. We're talking about a person who's just got a simple life. Just a simple life. Just you get up and you go about the business of going to work and you clock in and you clock out and you come home and you sit down and you have dinner with your family. Or even more simpler than that, we can go back to the way some of the people lived out in East Texas where I went to college, where they literally got up in the morning and went out squirrel hunting or scavenging for something for food for the next 2 or 3 days, or they'd go deer hunting the right season, and they were really eating this stuff down in the, I guess we'd call it the bowels of East Texas, where they literally got up and they'd do a little piddling here and there, whatever, because they had lost their jobs, and they lived a simple life of of covering their bases to live. And they truly went out and raised a garden every day. They went about doing what it took to survive. Go back to the 30s and the 40s and that type of stuff. Not as much in the 40s, but in the 30s and the 20s, we did that. We lived that type of way. Simple lives, not extravagant lives. There were people back in those days who lived extravagant lives too, like Solomon talks about, who they know everything. They know every angle on everything. They know how to do this. They know how to do that. And they're always working these angles on every single thing that happens. But for the simpler people, like my mom and dad, my dad got up every morning and mom cooked him eggs and bacon, and he was at work by 7:30, and by 5 o'clock he was at home, and we were studying and doing things around the house. He didn't have to go out at night on any type of job. There wasn't anything going on. We had family time together. It was just a simple life. Now we don't have time for our family, folks, because of these stupid, should I say stupid? I've already said one bad, other bad word in these lessons. I said poo-poo or something like that, and now I've said it again. But this stupid stuff that we let control our lives, and there's no relationships with people because we've got all this wisdom and knowledge coming after. I mean, we've got wisdom and knowledge coming at us from every single direction. I guess I'm pleading for you to not be like Solomon, because Solomon said, I've searched it out, I've been wise, and the more he's learned, the more he's found out that the belly of the snake is not clean, and every time he turns over another rock, it's just something else for him to worry about. And by the way, the smarter you are, the more you worry about the stuff that you do, because you ask these stupid questions that lead you to another thing that you really don't even know, and you wish, I wish I didn't know this stuff anymore. And you go, boy, I wish I'd asked that question. But now that I know, I'm going to worry about this. And now that I worry about this, I'm going to look it up on the internet. And I'm looking up on the internet and say, oh, no, 1,800 people hate this type of thing. You know, oh, and I've done it. I can't believe that I've done it. And you're just all tied up with this wisdom and knowledge that's coming after you. And for what purpose? For what purpose do you do it? So Solomon chapter 3 turns around and says, hey, I'm looking and I'm just going to catalog this. There's a time to do this. There's a time to do that. There's a time to this. And live, dove, die, hate, whatever. And God has burdened us down with filling our days with these things that we have to do. So he's put eternity in our hearts that we're like all beasts. And after this, there's absolutely nothing left for any of us, because like the beast dies and the dust returns to the dust, so we will die and the dust return to the dust. That's chapter 3. He blames God on it. Then he comes along and Solomon is telling us just how cynical that he had gotten. And he made some proverbs about how man without God lives. And that's where we are here in chapter 4. It's the preacher's warning about God. These are proverbs. Now, if these had been good proverbs about how godly man thinks, they would have been over in the proverbs too. But they're not over in the proverbs. You're not going to find them over there. They're over here in this, where he's showing how man who is living a life totally without God thinks about life and about God. Now he's talking about God. Guard your steps as you go to the house of God, and draw near to listen rather than to offer the sacrifice of fools, for they do not know that they are doing evil. What in the world is he talking about here? It's a proverb. Guard yourself. Do not, as you go, don't let anyone know. Go and listen and don't tell him anything. That just flies in the face of, as I think about the rest of the scripture. Ephesians tells us, pray without ceasing. Cast all your cares upon the Lord. What's all your cares? Oh, just the things that he will approve? No, it's all the cares. You see how that is in contrast to what Solomon is saying here? The rest of the Bible does not agree with what he's saying here, because this is how man without God thinks. And the others are how man with God thinks. So he says, don't, when you draw near to God, be careful and don't offer a sacrifice of fools, because they don't even know that they're doing evil. I can give you a great example of that. Jonah. Jonah's down in the northern kingdom and he's doing just fine. Jeroboam II is the king. Lo and behold, Syria and the Aramean nations up above the northern kingdom attack, and they carve out about 25% of the northern kingdom's land. They take it away from the northern kingdom. How does God answer? He sends Jonah to the capital city of Assyria by the name of Nineveh. Nineveh hits the wall of the city after he's taken a little cruise ship on a, you know, down in the deep. He's taken a little cruise and got thrown up on the beach. He lands 800 miles away. He walks the 800 miles. He gets to Nineveh. And when he gets there, he starts preaching an eight-word message. An eight-word message. And he preaches it as he walks 3 days through Nineveh, which is about 60 miles. And lo and behold, at the end of the 3 days, 120 men accept Jonah's God as their God. That message changes their lives. They have an encounter with God, plus all the women and children. Now, the rest of that story is, then back in the northern kingdom, Jeroboam II begins to fight against Aram and gathers all the land back, and Aram can't get Syria to help because now Syria is on the side of the northern kingdom. You see how quickly politics change? But in this case, it was for the good because Assyria now has turned to the Lord. 150 years from now, they're going to forget about that and they're going to be destroyed. That's the story of Nahum in the Old Testament. But now with Jonah, we see Assyria has come to know the Lord and had an encounter with God, and they don't even know this God. But how do they worship Him? They get on their knees. They throw dirt in their hair. They take ashes and they smudge it all over them. They fast for days and days and days, which is what every religion in the world does except for Christianity. It's not even taught about Christianity anywhere in the Christian information of the New Testament. Every other religion of the world takes this and they start worshiping God the only way they know how to worship God. And let me tell you this. God is okay with it at that point in time. It is a sacrifice of fools who don't know these things are things that appall God. But you know what? They've just turned from worshiping other gods to worship Him, and He's a big enough God to accept it, knowing that their heart is right. Why? Because He's not reading their lips. He's not reading their actions. He's reading what's happening inside of their heart. What is most important in your life is what you think and how you feel in your heart. Because everybody in this room has felt some way and said something and it didn't come out right. It didn't come out right and you were taken wrong. And then somebody nails you for it and your feelings are hurt because that's not what you meant. God understands. Hey, He created everything. New Testament tells us that God looks at our heart. Not at our actions, but look inside our heart. Now listen, eventually our heart will change our actions. But that's a perfect example of a sacrifice of fools, for they do not even know that they are doing evil. Boy, I spent a long time on that verse. We better pick it up here. Do not be hasty in word or impulse in thought to bring up a matter in the presence of God. Don't be hasty to bring up a matter in front of God, as if He doesn't already know what you're thinking. What is Solomon saying? See, man doesn't think about God having the ability to know what's going on. When you go to worship, don't even tell Him what you're thinking. For God is in heaven and you are on earth. Therefore, let your words be few. How many of y'all came out of Catholic background? Catholic background. Okay, I'm not offending. I'm just going to tell you the facts. Every single person that I know, Catholic, that's gotten in trouble like in marriage or whatever, something like that, and got into a tight in a situation, when I start talking to them about God interacting in their life, they always basically tell me, God is up there, I am down here, and God doesn't intervene in our lives. He's just up there. Same thing here. For God is in heaven and you're on earth. Therefore, let your words be few. Wait a minute. Didn't God create us so that we could have a relationship and a communication with Him, to pray without ceasing, to listen to Him, and for Him to listen to us? And it says, hey, let your words be few, for the dreams come through much effort, and the voice of a fool through many words. Yeah, much effort. If you want to fulfill what you want to do to make sure God, you got to work hard for it. You got to have lots of dreams, and you got to be like the fool who just talks. Today we call it marketing. Have y'all heard that My PC commercial? Do you realize that they say the word my PC about every 5 seconds? I just wanted to slap the TV. I knew it wouldn't hurt him, but I kept thinking, shut up. Should I say shut up? That's about the third word. Stupid, shut up. I shouldn't have said, all right. Look at this. When you make a vow to God, do not be late in paying it, for he takes no delight in fools. Pay what you vow. It is better that you should not vow than that you should vow and not pay. And before I go on, okay, who provides for all your needs? Yeah, it's the Philippians passage. For my God, Paul says, shall supply all my needs according to his riches and glory. So you make a vow to God. Where are you going to get the resources for that, to pay that vow? From God. So just in case you make a foolish vow and God doesn't give you the resources to pay that vow, do you think he's not smart enough to know that you can't fulfill that vow? I mean, think about it. It's a vicious circle. This little proverb they said about the vow and sinful speech. No, this is not right. Only man without God thinks this way. It's such a sad commentary on how man thinks. Don't even make a vow. Go on, look at him. It is better that you should not make a vow than you should vow and not pay. Do not let your speech cause you to sin, and do not say in the presence of the messenger of God that it was a mistake. Oh, I shouldn't have made the vow. I ain't got the money. I can't make the vow. You know, I'm sorry. I vowed, but you know, I ain't got the money. God doesn't do us that way. God is looking out for you, folks. Looking out for you. He knows what mistakes you're going to make. He's God. He knows the stupid stuff. I said it again, didn't I? I'm going to have to get it out of my vocabulary. He knows the stupid stuff you're going to do. He's okay with the stuff that you say that you cannot do because he's constantly leading you to make sure you don't make those same mistakes over. Don't you want to make a mistake on a little thing instead of a big thing? Why should God be angry on account of your voice, that means of making a vow, and destroy the work of your hands? For in many dreams and in many words, there is emptiness. Rather, fear God. In other words, it doesn't matter if you do this. It doesn't matter what you do. Be afraid of God. How old do you have to get before you what? Quit making. You're reaching that age. Many dreams. You know, I dream every single day for the past about 4 months. I've dreamed every day about building an airboat. I don't want an airboat. I've just been dreaming about it. I just like to do it. I don't want it. I don't want to pay for it. I don't want to have to keep it up. I just like to build one. Okay, so in case any of y'all want one, if y'all pay for it, we'll build it together. But I don't have the time to build it. And then about it, I'll think about that, and I think I'm going to build a houseboat. Yeah, I wish I could find me a barge, and I'd build me a houseboat. I'd insure it really well and pray for a hurricane. And when I'm in Dallas, I'm going to pray that the boat is at the bottom of the water whenever I get back. You know, that's what I think about something. Those are dreams, folks, just bad dreams that we think about, just things I'd like to do. I have a lot of things I'd like to do. I'd like to learn how to bevel glass before I die. I made that vow a long, long time. Before I die, I want to learn how to bevel glass. I haven't learned how to bevel glass yet because I'm not quite ready to die. So, and that was my thinking on it. I dream about lots and lots and lots of things that I absolutely do not have time to do, nor the resources to do. And just about the time you think you do have the resources to do, something will come up with your teenage daughter and you don't have the resources to do it anymore, or something like that. You know what I'm talking about. All of you been there, hadn't you? You've been there. So, for in many dreams and in many words, there is nothing but emptiness. So he says, rather, fear God. This is not the word fear means worship. This means be afraid of God. Folks, I'm not afraid of my God. I hope you're not afraid of your God either. It's the same God, I hope. Don't be afraid of Him, because He's looking out for every single care and need that we have. For weeks and weeks and weeks, there's a thing that's hanging over my head that I've been worrying about and worrying and worrying and worrying. And last week, one person in here asked me about it, standing right there at the piano where Roland is seated. And I gave that person an answer, and I said, I need, beyond anything in this world, I need God's intervention in this thing that's going on. For all practical purposes, what I was saying is, I need a miracle. And all the way home, I cried out to God. Well, I didn't realize, and I did realize that last week when I was teaching, my phone was buzzing in my pocket, a contraption. Yeah. Buzzing in my pocket, and I kept just ignoring it. I wasn't going to pick it up while we were in here doing this. So I get home, and the phone rings, and it is another member of our church who tells me that something's got to happen that day, and he's got it lined out, and can I meet some people at a certain place? And it was the answer I needed. It was the answer I needed. Folks, God is a God who answers your prayers. I went to bed on Friday night saying, God, take this ringing out of my ears, please. I don't care if I'm deaf for the rest of my life, but take the ringing out of my ears. And I woke up on Saturday morning without the ringing, still deaf. Spurgeon, it is said about Spurgeon that he was so close to God that he could just whisper a thought, and if it was God's will, it would be done. That's where we want to get in our life. That's where we want to live. He goes on to say, if you see oppression of the poor and denial of justice and righteousness in the province, do not be shocked at the sight. For one official watches over another official, and there are high officials over them. After all, a king who cultivates the land is an advantage to the land. Huh. He's already done the setup for this one. It was in last week's lesson. Remember, this is all one message, and we're splitting it up because we're talking about it. But this really needs to be read as one setting of one sermon from one preacher at a time. It's one sermon, just like going in and listening to Brother John preach one sermon. That's what this is. Don't tear it apart, because if you tear it apart, you end up with all these pieces that don't fit together. And so I'm trying to hold all that together. He says, you see this oppression. He set this up in last week. He says, listen, I've seen that in the place of justice, there is wickedness. And I've seen in the place of righteousness, there is wickedness. Well, let me just expand that for you. Go over to our auditorium that seats 2,500 people. Now, at 1,800 people in that auditorium, it is hard to find two seats together. You realize? At 80% full, it's full. Because unless we just squeeze the people in, you're not going to find those other seats, because it's just two here, two here, two here, two here. And that 9:30 service is basically full with 1,848 or whatever it's been averaging. As much as most of y'all are in there and you are into Brother John's message and listening to what he has to say, there's somebody in that auditorium with a perverted mind thinking perverted things. I guarantee you. Because in the place of righteousness, there's wickedness. The place of justice, there's wickedness. You go down to the courthouse, and I guarantee you, in the midst of the courthouse in the proceeding, there's somebody there, be it the judge or the lawyers or whoever, that does not have a good perspective on what's going on. And they are not there for good. They are there for evil. So Solomon says, if you see oppression, don't be shocked, because oppression is going to happen. Somewhere in that chain of authority, there's going to be someone who's got some sort of wicked thoughts about something going on. Let's don't even talk about the high officials that are in Washington. Oh, I think you got that example, didn't you? I could hear that rumble. Well, he's setting this up. He says, okay, what advantages there? He said, the king, there is an advantage if the king takes care of the land, the king takes care of everything going on, yes, and cultivates it, absolutely. You know what it brings? Here's what it brings. Verse 10, he who loves money will not be satisfied with money, nor he who loves abundance with its income. This too is vanity. The more you cultivate, the more you make. The more you make, you think the more you have to cultivate, so that you can make hay while the sun's shining, keep making and keep making and keep making. And there's no end to, we found this cash cow, so we want to keep making money while we can keep making money. And, this is not enough money. We go off to work, and we work, and we work, and we work. The alarm goes off, and you start working in the morning. You're thinking about work before you get to work. Then you work all day long. Then you go home and work some more. Saturday comes, and you work again. Sunday comes, and you work some more. And you don't have time for your family. You don't have time for anything. You don't even have time for God because you're working so much. Work, 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 work. That's all we do, folks. And for us to have so much wisdom and so much smarts and so much at availability of at our fingertips, the reality is all it's done is just consumed our time, so we have no time for God. We have no time for our wives. We have no time for our husbands. We have no time for our children or for our children's children and all down the line. We do not have time to play pinochle with our kids, or rookie, or whatever other game that you like to play, Uno or 2-0 or 3-0, whatever those Tex-Mex games are, you know? We don't have time for this. Now, some of y'all grew up in a simpler life. Yeah, you did. Where you had not a TV in your house, and your telephone was 8 miles down the road if you wanted to go down there and use it. Borrow a telephone. Or if you did have a telephone, you had to know which ring was yours. You had to know. There are people sitting right here who do not know what we're talking about. Have no idea. I was thinking about this the other day, of things we have no idea about. Some of y'all know. I got it. You want to think about this? Most of us who are under the age of 40 or 45 do not know what I'm fixing to say and what it is. Monkey blood. You know what monkey blood is? Yeah, it was probably 10 years old when they were still using it. You know, how many of y'all know what monkey blood is? Look at that. Some of y'all over 40 do not know what monkey blood is. It's like manure comb, except it doesn't burn and it's all red. I think I've lost the class. I hear a rumbling. Things that satisfy, money doesn't satisfy. We think we're going to have more and more and more and more and more. Chasing after wealth does not satisfy. It brings only meaningless. Look over in the book, Proverbs 23, verses 4 through 5. Now, this is on the other side. This is what a godly man thinks about chasing after money. Do not weary yourself to gain weight. Wealth. That's the same thing. Do not weary yourself to gain wealth. Cease from your consideration of it. Cease from your consideration of it. When you set your eyes on it, it is gone. For wealth certainly makes itself wings, like an eagle that flies toward the heavens. I talk with people all the time who just want to make money. Just make money. Just got to have some money. What do you need money for? I want to spend it. You just want money to spend? Yes. So I need an idea to make money. Can you help me with an idea to make money? No. Get a job. Yeah, that ought to help. No, but I want to make big money. What would you do with it? Do you know where one of the largest suicide rates is in the state of Texas right now? Of those people who have won the lottery. Yeah. Do you know why? Because they tasted that other side. They thought the money would always be there. Then they made some financial decisions that were really bad. In order to get out of those financial decisions, they sold their lottery remains to someone who bought it for 20, 30, or 40 cents on the dollar. And now they're back to having to go to work, and they don't like that life. They didn't like the life they had with the lottery money, and they don't like it without it. Folks, sometimes the best thing you can do in this life is to get happy in the state that you are in, Paul says. I know that's Texas right now. I'm talking about the place where you live. And I will tell you this. When you get happy where you live, God will bless you with a little something extra to take you just a little further down the road to help you have a little satisfaction in your life. When good things increase, the scripture goes on, talking about takers here. We've talked about money not satisfying. We talk about the land being cultivated. When good things increase, those who consume them increase. So what advantage to their owners except to look on? And Solomon's day, he's talking about the fields. It's a good year. Every seed that we sowed has sprung, and it is a great crop. Do you know what happens when you get a good crop in his days? Out of the woodwork comes everybody to glean from the edges of the field. And so they glean, and you know what happens when you glean from the edge of a field? The edges begin to go in further, deeper into the field. The more you blessing you have, the more people come from everywhere. Everywhere. Since we put on our envelope that you can donate when we entered into this new building to missions and benevolence, I must tell you that our requests have more than quadrupled. Last Monday morning, between 8 o'clock and 12 o'clock, there were more than $43,000 worth of requests for money of people in the houses that are going to be foreclosed on and apartments going to be evicted from. A person whose air conditioner is out and they went out and made a deal and had it installed and told him the church was going to pay. Because we do that, because now we take up an offering for benevolence. So I'm thinking when I hear this three or four times in the Monday conversations, I'm thinking I better find out if we got any money coming in through the benevolence envelope. So I pick up the phone and I call over and I say, hey, have we got money rolling in through the... No, it's about the same as it always is. You know, you get what you get. It says helping hands and about the same. Because they've heard that we've built a building debt-free with millions and millions of dollars, so surely their pockets are deep. Now think about it, you already knew that. The more you get, somebody wants it from you. I get letters every single week from every place in the entire United States of people because they've heard we give away cars, and they're asking for a car, or they're asking for us to pay their utilities or something like that from all over the United States. As things increase and good things increase, those who consume them increase, Solomon says. Look on. The sleep of the working man is pleasant, whether he eats little or much. So the man who just goes to work and just does his job and comes home, he eats. That's great. That's fine. It's good sleep. Oh, I worked hard today. We moved about 16 tons of steel. What do you get? Another day older, just a little bit deeper in debt. Mama cooked up some good biscuits and bacon and eggs for supper. I just love breakfast at supper time. I don't know why there's breakfast at breakfast time anyway, because it's really better at supper time when you can taste it after you got all the sleep stuff out of your mouth from all the night before. It's just good. Just went to work, moved that steel. Oh, I never will forget the very first day I took a job with Montgomery Wards. 1977, I was working Montgomery Wards in the lawn and garden division. And lo and behold, an 18-wheeler showed up with bags and bags and bags of manure, not on pallets. And it was my task that day to unload that 40-foot 18-wheeler by hand. I slept good that night. I slept good. Read on the rest of it, though. But the full stomach of the rich man does not allow him to sleep. The full stomach of the rich man. Why? Because he owns so much that it's owning him. He owns so much that it's controlling him. Controlling him. Let's take this to a small level. Called a phone, that everybody seems to have one. You know, okay? Let's say you drop it in the sink and it does not work. Do you know in 99.99% pure ivory snow cases, you just had the worst day of your life because now you can't talk to anybody? And when you get to the phone place to get it replaced, especially if it's one of those certain brands, they don't have phones for you in the store anymore. They have to send them to you through the mail to replace them. And if it happens to be on a Friday afternoon, you can pay $150 extra and have Saturday delivery, or you can wait till Monday. But you've got all those people who are going to be calling you because it's really important. And you don't even have a job. And you haven't even applied for a job, but all those people calling you are really important because your social life is through a contraption and not with people that you're with. Went to Landry's in Galveston yesterday, looked around the restaurant, and not hardly anybody's talking to anybody at the table that they're with. What's wrong with this picture? They own something that owns them. Then you can be poor like I am. I'm so poor on things. I got a 1934 in the garage. I got a 1961 Triumph TR3 that's not finished in the garage. I got all those tools in the garage that I just have to keep moving around because they're in the way. I've got a Yukon. I've got a Hummer that when they fixed the engine, they overfilled the air conditioner, and I had to fix it myself yesterday. I've got this house with this swimming pool, and there's these two umbrellas that keep blowing over on the back porch, and there's all these eight chairs that go along with these glass tables, and if you leave the umbrella on the table, when the wind blows, it blows over the table and the chairs. And then inside, we've got this 5,300 square feet of wood floors that you have to clean, and you have to mop, and you have to do that. And then we have a dog in the house, and inside this house, there's a... And there's dog hair all around the corner. So I have to get down on my hands and knees with this towel, because that's the way my wife does it. And I just have to clean it all out and get it all ready and vacuum and clean off. Then I've got this boat that sits in the water. And it just sits there. And I'm not so sure that I was not the most blessed in my life in October of 1974 when I moved to my car that did not even run out in the woods and lived in the woods for 5 months and walked to school. I'm not so sure that that's not probably the best thing that ever happened to me in my entire life. The very best thing. To have to make a decision, do you live in an apartment or do you get your engine fixed on your car? The worst decision I ever made was I tore that engine apart. You don't know why it's the worst decision. I'm fixing to tell you. Because the car was only 10 months old. I didn't know there was a warranty. Okay? I just pulled it over with ropes over into the woods and went down and got me a set of hand tools and sockets and started tearing it apart. And found a little red wagon that only had three wheels on it and loaded all that stuff, those pistons and rings and the heads onto the little red wagon. I put the back wheel on, the front wheel on the back wheel so that I could hold it up from the front and walked into town to the auto parts house, and they laughed at me as I walked through the front door with it. When they listed out everything that I needed to get back, it was $153 to fix it, and I didn't have but $15 in my pocket. So I start walking out the door with it, and the manager comes out and says, the owner comes out and says, son, you can't go walking through Kilgore like this. Just leave it here, and I'll take you back to where you're going. And he took me back to my car. He says, is this where you're living? I said, this is where I'm living. He said, son, I promise you, you get the money, and you come in here, and I'll bring these parts back out to you. It took 3 months, but I had to make a decision. It was the best time of my life. Going on. As things increase, what advantage is it to those who look on? The stomach of the rich man does not allow him to sleep because you're worried about everything in creation that is happening. There's a grievous evil which I have seen under the sun. Riches being hoarded by their owners to his hurt. Riches hoarded. That's what I'm talking about. the stuff we got. The stuff. Just more stuff and more stuff and more stuff. Amazon.com. Order it today and have it tomorrow on Prime. eBay. You're constantly bidding on things that you absolutely don't need, but you just got this gut thing inside of you that causes you to want it. A grievous thing of those who hoard the riches. When those riches were lost through a bad investment and he had fathered a son, then there was nothing to support him. A bad investment. All the riches you make, you put it into some pile. By the way, it's not here in this, but it's over in Solomon's other writings where he says, always make your investments into seven, yea, even eight investments, because you do not know what tomorrow may bring. So if you've got all your eggs in one basket and your investments, you need to go split them into seven or even eight. Do not keep them all in one basket, because you do not know what tomorrow... Now, that's God, that's Solomon with God telling us that here. Verse 18. As he had come naked from his mother's womb, so he will return as he came. He will take nothing from the fruit of his labors that he can carry in his hand. And this also is a grievous evil. Exactly as a man is born, thus he will die. So what advantage is it to him who toils for the wind? Throughout his life, he also eats in darkness with great vexation, sickness, and anger. What advantage is it? Whether you're rich or whether you're poor, what advantage is it? What advantage is to eat the hordes of stuff that you gather? Folks, there is, in Solomon's mind, there's evil in gathering way too much. There's no evil in having way too much, folks. Even though I gripe and complain about all the stuff that I have, it's okay that I have it, and one of these days I will sell it and pass it off. I don't sell anything. I know better than that. I'll give it away to somebody. Every few years or every year or so, I'll go take a truck to my house, a Helping Hands truck, and I will empty out stuff out of my garage. Now, I've just about got it down to where there's not much left in my garage, okay? The problem is that stuff never makes it past the guys who are driving the trucks. Because it's good stuff. They just take it to their garages and put it in their garage. I thought, well, I can do that. So now whenever I go clean out my garage, I just say, hey, I'm bringing it over to your house. Because actually I told them to take it and throw it away. No, they take it to their house. Just stuff. There's nothing wrong with having stuff as long as you have a right perspective about it. That it all belongs to God. Everything belongs to God. Solomon actually gives us a Proverbs about this over in 13:22. He says, a good man leaves an inheritance for his children's children, and wealth of the sinner is stored up for the righteous. The wealth of the sinner is stored up for the righteous. That's in direct contrast to what he said over here. Over here he says, hey, there's no advantage. There's no good. You die, you're born, you die, it's all the same. Okay, and he lives his life in vexation. But over here he says, no, it's not vexation. In Proverbs, as a godly man, he says, no, you should leave inheritance to your children's children. Now, those of you who are children's children, you're alike that we're going to leave inheritance to you. I know that. Going on, he says, here is what I have seen to be good and lifting and fitting. To eat, to drink, and to enjoy oneself in all one's labor in which he toils under the suns during the few years of his life, which God has given him, for this is, you hear it, his reward. He's already made the case. There's nothing after this. There's no life after this. For the man without God, there's nothing after this, he says. That's how man thinks. So eat, drink, and be merry, because this is your reward. There's nothing after this. So make this, whether you're happy, it's right here. Make this happy. And there are really and truly people out there who say, listen, your heaven and your hell is depending on what you do here on this earth. And that is not the truth. Furthermore, as for every man to whom God has given riches and wealth, he has also empowered him to eat from them and to receive his reward and rejoice in his labor. This is the gift of God. To eat, drink, food, that's your gift from God? Well, we could make the case that it is, but I'm not sure that's the right case. For he will not often consider the years of his life because God keeps him occupied with the gladness of his heart. He won't even think about anything because he's occupied with everything that he's so happy about. Look at my boat. Look at my car. Look at this. Look at that. Look at this. Have you seen this? Have you seen this? Have you seen that? You're an arrogant person. Do you know people don't like to be around people like that? You just don't. People don't like to be around people. Okay, you grand folks, you got grandkids who don't want to come to your house. Is it because you manipulate them too much and decide for them what the schedule's going to be when they get there? They come just to be, and you want a plan. Remember, kids today just want to hang out. They just want to be. They do not want you to schedule everything. And listen, folks, there are places that adults like to go eat that kids don't like to go eat. If you want to endear your kids to you, grandkids, ask them where they want to go eat. It's just the way it is. Who's more important, you or them, in your life? They are. That is correct. Looking on. There is an evil which I have seen on the sun and is prevalent among men. A man whom God has given riches and wealth and honor so that his soul lacks nothing of all that he desires. You're a person that God's given you everything you desire, so your soul lacks nothing. But God has not empowered him to eat from them, for a foreigner enjoys them. In other words, you had everything that you desired, and now it's been taken away, and somebody else has it. Most people in here don't know that what that's like, but perhaps one or two, perhaps some of our people from Germany know what it's like to have had and then had not, to have it taken away from them. There is a friend that I have now who's from South Africa, who his 25 acres of land was taken away from them by the current president, and he had to run from South Africa. And if he returns, the current president will probably have him killed. And his family is all over here, and they came over here with absolutely nothing. Nothing. If a man fathers 100 children and lives for many years, however many they be, but his soul is not satisfied with good, and he does not even have a proper burial, then I say, better is the miscarriage than he, for it comes in futility and goes in obscurity, and its name is covered in obscurity. It never sees the sun, and it never knows anything. It is better off than he. Even if another man lives 1,000 years twice and does not enjoy good things, do not all go to one place? All a man's labor is for his mouth, and yet his appetite is not yet satisfied. He's already set this up before force two. It's better that you were not even ever born, or that you were miscarried than to live this life and be unsatisfied. How sad. For what advantage does the wise man have over the fool? Now, wise man means a person who can see things and understand things like Solomon, and the fool is just a simple man, okay? What advantage does the poor man have, knowing how to walk before the living? What the eyes see is better than what the soul desires. This too is futility and striving after the wind. Sadly, most of our souls do not desire what is truly important. Most of our souls are preoccupied by what our eyes see, and we have to have it. We got to have it. We call it compulsive buying. That's the reason they put all those fuzzy monkey stuffs up at the cash register, so you'll reach over and grab them as you're going out. And lo and behold, it adds $20 to $40 to your sales at the end at the cash register, because you see it and you got to grab it and you got to have it, because your eyes like it and your eyes want it. What advantage is this? Whatever exists has already been named, he says, and it is known what man is, for he cannot dispute with him who is stronger than he is. For there are many words which increase futility. What then is the advantage of a man For who knows what is good for a man during his lifetime? During the few years of his futile life, he will spend them like a shadow. For who can tell a man what will be after him under the sun? Questions. Question after question. Solomon is fixing to show us his cynical side. When we pick up in chapter 7, it is going to be one cynical statement right after another, and it's how man turns cynical the longer he lives in this life without God. Don't be that way, folks. Stop it right now. Turn your heart to God. Turn your heart to the Lord. And whatever the Lord's will may be, let it be your will too. Do not live a life without God. Lord Jesus, we thank you for the word that you have placed here for us to study. Lord, it's a message that we do not like to hear because it is the other side of the fence. From those of us who already belong to you, we live one way. But some of us are straddling the fence, trying to live in both worlds, the world without you and the world with you. May it never be, Lord. May we jump that fence and stay on your side and on the path for you. In your name, amen.